Right now, you know the person who assures you that you're not fat, you're just of average American stock. You know, they're always trying to be helpful. Americans are too weight-obsessed anyway, they might say. Or how about those friends who raved about that glamorous party that they're attending Friday night and feign shock when you mention you never received an invite? Authors Mike Elbow and Virginia Heffernan have a word for that kind of person who cloaks subtle digs in toothy smiles: an underminer. In a new book, Elbow and Heffernan bring to life one such character who makes predatory passive aggression into an art form. If you've ever been preyed upon by someone who slyly belittles your worth as a human being, you can give us a call. Maybe you're the one who takes perverse pleasure in this practice. You can call us as well. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And with us, Mike Elbow and Virginia Heffernan, co-authors of the book The Underminer, or The Best Friend Who Casually Destroys Your Life. Mike, Virginia, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Hi there.
This, by the way, is a wonderful book, and anybody who says it's just too light and we should be paying attention to more important things, I don't listen to them anyway. But suppose
the pain of the underminer is real.
Very real.
Who is the underminer?
The underminer we decided it's this friend that's been in your life since maybe college or high school who knows every single thing about you, and you just can't get them out of your life. They're too ensconced in it, and they say random things to you like, "You look really tired. Are you okay? Oh, you're still drinking. Oh."
They know a lot about your past, too. So every time you try to change, like maybe stop drinking or go on a diet, they're right there to remind you that you weren't always that way.
Yeah, or to keep you on the track. I know you have this wonderful passage in there, you know, with your friend Andy, and I don't know if you can get to it quickly enough. We can come back to it if you get a chance. Talking about his trying to stop drinking and subtly trying to bring him along or make him feel either foolish or guilty for giving it up.
Yeah, and then there's the whole reverso effect where the victim does stop drinking, and then the underminer is like, "Oh yeah, I'm drinking now wine for its antioxidants." How about you?
Just one glass a day.
Yeah. Just one glass a day. It probably won't make you less interesting, I don't think. So tell me, Mike, you perform this on stage as well. I mean, you actually turn this into a performance.
Yeah, Virginia and I came up with this character about 4 years ago, I think. And I started performing it on stage. And at first, I thought it was just going to be this very New York-y, super competitive, passive-aggressive character. But then started performing the character in different cities and found it to be quite popular.
Oh, so the underminer has evolved.
The underminer has become national.
Oh, wow.
Has syndicated itself.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't a regional thing. People have picked up on it all across the country.
Pretty amazingly, yeah. I think anywhere where a city, like, for instance, I did it in San Francisco last year, and it was a big hit in San Francisco. And I have a feeling that that city wouldn't have understood who the underminer was until it had experienced the incredible weirdness of the dot-com boom and bust and seen its city transformed and its rents skyrocket.
Okay, so give us a glimpse.
Of the underminer?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have my scarf? Did you bring it? No, that's okay. No, it's just that I got it in India when I was there. It's just this really beautiful thing, and I really treasure it. It's just really important to me. You're so flaky. You look really tired. Are you okay? Oh, you went out drinking last night. So great how you can still do that. You're so crazy. Oh, you know what? I just ran into your ex-boyfriend, Carl. Oh, he looks great. He's good. He's good. Yeah, he's in this really good relationship right now, and they just bought this huge, beautiful place in Socrates, and they're fixing it up together. You know, when you were dating Carl, I didn't really understand why you liked him, but now I totally do.
This is hellish. And it goes on for pages and pages.
It goes on and on.
There's certain phrases that from the 90s, like, "You're so crazy," and "It's all good," that became, like, the stock and trade of the underminer.
Uh-huh.
Oh, always with the, like, "You were out late last night. You're so crazy. That's great." "You're so hungover. I love it."
So these are the stock phrases, like in the sort of epic poems that you can just plug in when you get stuck.
Exactly. Yes.
For a really sharp dig. Now, have you been the recipient of, I mean, is this stuff real? Have you heard every bit of this, or did you compose it all? How did it come together?
We used to live together, and when we were roommates and struggling and desperate in our lives, we would come home with stories for each other about ways that someone had, like, pulled the pins out of our whole day. And we started collecting the phrases partly to just make ourselves feel better, like, you know, be able to get some perspective on them. And then we had to admit that sometimes the words of the underminer came from us. Mm-hmm. They were things that we said to other people. So it became a sort of a list of things that, you know, people said to us and we said to other people. And then we just started making stuff up.
So mm-hmm. in the process of doing this, have you sort of gotten deeper into the psychology of the underminer? You know who this person is a little more than you did at the start?
I think so. Sometimes I think the underminer will say something meaner than Mike thinks I'll say.
And I guess by that, I mean, what motivates the underminer? You know, sort of what's going on with them? Insecurity seems to be the first, but I bet there's something more.
Yeah, we have a few ideas. I mean, one is that, you know, we live in this very competitive world, but also a very polite society as well. So it's just a way for us to get out aggressions with each other. Mm. I think, like, maybe in some other age, we'd be slapping each other with white gloves or doing a snake dance or something. But these days, you know, you have to sort of couch it in the super politeness.
Have you bothered to? I wonder if this is different from country to country. Is this an American phenomenon, do you suppose?
It worked well in England when we changed some of the references when Mike was performing it. But I don't know outside the Anglosphere. That's a good question.
Or it has to work in a presumably polite society, or one that doesn't have another means of sort of digging with a smile.
Right. And also, I mean, I think the underminer thrives in our society as well because we live in this psychotic, accelerated technological society where every time you turn around, there's a new kind of DVD or iPod transformation that you have to make. And the underminer, we gave the underminer this sort of power of constant updating, so that the underminer knows how just to stand top and be like, you have a cassette, you have your demo on cassette, right. Wow, that's just basically career suicide.
He gets obsolescent. He's always ahead. Like, your thing is always obsolete.
800-989-8255 if you want to join our conversation with Mike Elbow and Virginia Heffernan, authors of The Underminer. Alexander's on the line from Columbia, Ohio. Hello, Alexander.
Hi, it's
Alexandra. Cool. Forgive me. There you go, Alexandra.
Yeah, from Columbus, Ohio. Are you trying to undermine me?
Well, that was so 90s.
I was calling because I remember really clearly sort of stumbling into undermining somebody with a comment I had made at a artist colony that was kind of fancy, and so I made this comment that cut somebody down, and I remember how bad it felt because I'm not like a dyed-in-the-wool underminer. And that was part of what is so funny about the underminer, which I read about and read in The New Yorker, is that it takes a particular kind of skill and callousness to be the underminer, and if you're not one, you can't really fake it.
Yeah, I think if you didn't have the instant hit of euphoria, then you probably don't have the real problem. I think that's a good sign, though.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, but the other question is, it takes a certain kind of person to be hurt by the underminer, right? I mean, a certain amount of sophistication and sensitive, don't you think? I mean,
well, one thing that I think, one thing that's helped us from writing this book is, I think in the beginning of when we were like gathering these phrases, we wouldn't really realize how damaging they were until we got home and we were just like, why do I feel like committing suicide? Oh yeah. So, but now that we're sort of professional gatherers, we kind of hear the phrase immediately when it happens. So we're just like, you're undermining, you know?
Yeah.
Very sensitive. Pasha's on the line from Salt Lake City. Hi, Pasha.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I think it's funny you're doing this show because I actually refer to a friend of mine as the queen of the complicit. So she will say things to me like she said to me, you look really good. You're not as bad as you were last year.
That's,
and I love it. I love
classic.
It.
Like, very clean lines. Classic underwriting.
It is. And it's like she has, they almost like they have a brother that's like the one-upsmanship. You know, you can't go and do anything without or say anything without them saying, oh, yes, I golf too, but I walked the 18 holes, you know. She's constantly undermining everything that I do, but I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess. I continue to go out with her.
Oh, I'm the same way.
Oh, yeah.
One of my closest friends is my underminer, and I still, to this day, is one of, I love him to death, and I would never, you know, stop hanging out with him.
Well, you suggested it. I mean, this is somebody who has known you for a long time, and thank you very much for your call, Pasha.
Thanks for the complicit. I love that.
Complicit, right. The fact is you do hang on. I mean, if they've known you for a long time, they've probably been at some version of this for that length of time, and why do you suppose we hang in there that long?
Well, when you asked what kind of person falls prey to an underminer, it's someone who can't let go of their friends, because these, I mean, the clear decision for the victim in our book, you know, the book is written in the second person, and it's addressed, you know, to the reader, to this sort of unidentified listener.
Yeah.
And he just should say to the underminer, I can't see you again.
This
but
is
he
too
just
much.
Always, yeah, he always wants to be back there with him.
So very briefly, have you come up with a line you said, I just can't do it, it's too mean?
Put it in the book.
Yeah, and just not put it in there.
I think there were a couple like things that got a little too off color that we kind of scaled back, but it is a fine line because, like Virginia was saying, there's got to be a way where it's still the underminer still is sort of like pulling you in, being like, "You look great. Your hair is fine. You have a normal body, and you look great." You know, right. Sort of like there's this way. You have to like it's very alchemical.
Mike Elbo and Virginia Heffernan, co-authors of the book The Underminer, or The Best Friend Who Casually Destroys Your Life, joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have some an email here. Are they still there?
Yeah.
Great. Listen, I want you to answer just a few more questions because we've got some more time here and a chance for you to answer some questions.
Great.
Here's an email that we got. My best friend is Karen. She's an underminer, and I used to think that she never meant to say rude things, but after having, here it is, 14 years, I believe it is her way of feeling better about herself. So my question to you is, before we get to this, a little more of this, are there people to take a long time to figure out that this is happening to them?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's the nature of it. Is that there's something about the phrases, and you know, when you asked, did we ever think that a line in the book was too mean? The underminer always has to have plausible deniability. It always has to be the kind of thing that if you confronted the person who said something like, "Do you still like your new haircut?" If you went to him and said, "Why did you ask me if I still liked my new haircut?" Then he'd say, "What are you talking about? That was a perfectly reasonable question.
You're
I knew you
so
were
tense.
Excited about your haircut. You're so tense.
Yeah, you should do yoga."
So if the underminer ever, yeah, so the underminer are just always covering his steps. And I think that the plausible deniability makes you go home, as the emailer did with Karen, and probably at the end of the day and say, "God, she kind of makes me feel bad." And then thought, "Oh, you know, it's probably me. It's probably my fault." Mm-hmm.
Now, have you taken, as you travel around the country and hear from other people, have you begun absorbing some of their, or picking up some of their, these insults, these jibes, and are you getting ready for, you know, the sequel?
The Underminer 2, you
too. Underminer, you too, yeah.
Well, as you know, the victim meets a tragic end.
Shh. We're not giving
no
away
spoilers,
the ending.
No
away.
Spoilers.
Don't give it away.
No spoilers, exactly.
Yeah.
But, so the Underminer might have to, like, kind of reconfigure or herself.
I think there's no end to the number of victims out there, but
it's true.
The potential is great. Let's go to Mike. He's on the line from Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. This undermining person, it made me think of not just one person, but the South as an entire region. you can say whatever you want to, however cruel and heartless it may be to another person, but as long as you back it up with "bless his little heart" or "bless her little heart," it's perfectly acceptable and no one will bat an eye at what you just said.
Mike and I met at the University of Virginia and in Charlottesville, so maybe there was a little bit of like Southern manners informing our thinking about it.
Well, no, as you say that, I can hear that kind of sweet, genteel voice, and it does strike me that this has been in the works and in the culture for a long time.
Oh, yeah. And also...
It's a modern-day form of slapping someone's face with a white glove.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the "bless his little heart," and the possibly the modern equivalent of that, is the phrase, "it's all good." I don't want to harp on that, but I feel like that phrase is
very
just
California.
Like so much violence can be done if at the end of it. You just say, "it's all good."
It's all good, and and a little smile on your face. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stacio with my guests, the underminers, Mike Elbo and Virginia Heffernan, who have written the book called The Underminer, or The Best Friend Who Casually Destroys Your Life. And we're taking your phone calls to hear from you and hear whether or not you've been a victim to this sort of thing. And let's go to the phones now. And Timlin, is that right? Timlin is on the line? Yeah.
Hi, yes. I'm so happy to hear this has got me smiling ear to ear. My mother is the underminer.
Oh, no.
Yes, familial undermining. It happens.
It's true.
I don't know if I should go to a psychiatrist or just buy the book and laugh it off. Because at this point, I'm 41 and she lives about a mile away.
Buy the book and laugh it off, because if you're
going to have to,
you'll recognize the phrases and it'll just save you so much trouble wondering if it's your problem, which I feel like we all do.
You know, because it made my day, and maybe this is some fodder for future acts.
There you go. Thank you, Timlin. Now, how many people have bought the book and given it to the underminer and say, "I think you'll love this book"?
Someone suggested, yeah, that that was the way to go, and we've heard about people doing that.
Yeah, I have, I have to say I've done that to my underminer. Like, last time he did something, I was like, I have a great book for you to read.
And my underminer actually read the book in galleys.
Did they take the hint, or did they say, well, thanks for asking?
I don't know. I can't tell.
Very quickly, Naomi's on the line from Davis, California. Hi, Naomi.
Hi. I want to talk about the way parents of young children are some of the worst underminers of each other.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Totally.
And as soon as they were born, other parents, especially moms, would undermine everything that I did. Mm. It's like, oh, you're not breastfeeding? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What's wrong? And, oh, your child is in the 50th percentile? Mine is in the 90th.
Yes. Oh, it's...
Right?
It's
mommy mining.
And what,
mommy...
theirs is worse? Oh, yeah. Your child woke up last night? My child never sleeps.
I have to say, that might go into you, too, because we took out a whole mommy section because it was just such an ocean of undermining.
I just have been avoiding other moms. It's too stressful.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
My favorite is my friend Ellen, who I knew from high school, who I got in touch with, who I hadn't talked to in so long. She told me that her underminer was like, your kid, Joey, looked so cute playing unattended in front of the school.
Oh. Got the message. Mike Elbow, Virginia Heffernan, thank you very much. They are the co-authors of the book The Underminer, or The Best Friend Who Casually Destroys Your Life, that joined us from NPR's Bureau in New York. In Washington, I'm Frank Stachow, NPR News.